In Australia, our post-COVID world is entering a new phase. There's less anxiety about the unknown. Our ability to manage clusters has improved, and the promise of vaccines is in sight. But since March, there has always been uncertainty, with our medical professionals treating COVID patients having to learn and adapt along the way. But what have we learned? Well, Professor Lou Irving is the Director of the Director of the Department of Respiratory and Sleep Medicine at the Royal Melbourne Hospital. And he joins us now to tell us a little more. Professor Irving, thank you so much for joining us this morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm very well, thanks, Lily.
A feature of the virus has been a huge variation in how it affects different people. So we're everything from severe cases among young and healthy to asymptomatic cases among at-risk people. Have we learned anything about why this variation exists?
I think probably the short answer is no, but I think your statement's very true. That, you know, say, for example, compared to influenza, which usually causes a significant but short-lived illness in most people, COVID is really quite different, because for the majority of people, as you indicated, it's even mild. You know, it's significantly milder than influenza. It's more like a head cold, and in some people, it's completely asymptomatic. But it targets certain people, for severe disease. And this is so in about 20% of cases, there can be severe disease in older people or people with underlying comorbidities, but particularly diabetes, but probably also people with underlying lung disease, including asthma.
Right.
The reason for this sort of quite marked disparity in severity is not fully understood, apart from the obvious that older people in general don't tolerate respiratory viruses as much as younger people.
Right, okay. The initial outbreak saw anxiety around our hospital system becoming inundated, and things like PPE and ventilators saw shortages. You're at Royal Melbourne, where a lot of COVID patients have been treated. How was it managed for you down there, and what have we learnt about this logistical side of treatment?
So, again, you correctly highlight that the main anxiety for healthcare workers was the possibility that the system would become overwhelmed. And evidence for that was coming from overseas. And the anxiety related to that both is in terms of not being able to treat the COVID patients adequately and to have to make decisions about who would be on a ventilator and who wouldn't be on a ventilator. But it would also, if the hospital is overwhelmed, patients with other conditions, heart disease, cancer, etc., would also miss out on the high level of care that they normally got. We didn't get to that stage, and no other hospital in Australia did, but we did get to a stage where there were things that we didn't anticipate, and we had a high number of patients at one stage in an aged care ward and rehabilitation area, where a combination of the number of patients plus the facility itself, they were open wards rather than single rooms. And what we've subsequently recognised is possibly suboptimal ventilation of the rooms meant that healthcare workers became infected in spite of wearing optimal PPE. So this wasn't the whole hospital being overwhelmed, but it was an area where the density of infected patients, the nature of the patients, so they were elderly patients who were confused and were wandering and were often calling out, and the calling out generated aerosols. And for your listeners, they're probably aware that at the beginning of the pandemic, there was a discussion as to how COVID is spread. And at the beginning of the pandemic, it was believed that the major form of spread was by droplets, and that a person would become infected by touching something that contained droplets and then touching their face, and the virus then entering the respiratory system in that way. And that's the way influenza is spread and many, many other respiratory viruses. There is a second mode of spread, aerosol spread, so breathing in particles that have been generated by calling out or by sneezing or by coughing. And at the beginning of the pandemic, it wasn't clear whether that was whether that occurred with COVID or not. It was known to occur with SARS. It's known to occur with measles and so on. It turns out that it probably is important, particularly in certain circumstances, and hence, you know, the importance of masks and so on and of good ventilation. And that's been a lesson learned over time in the last 6 or 8 months.
One last question before I let you go. With the vaccines on the way, is our medical system now changing its focus and allocation of resources in preparation of that next phase? And if so, how?
I think we're an island. We should go, and I think preventing the virus from coming into the community, you know, through appropriate quarantine, and then if it does get into the community, you know, rapid contact tracing, rapid testing is still our first line of protection. Vaccination will add to that level of protection and will make it possible for people to travel and so on. So it's an added level, but you know, my personal belief is that quarantine, contact tracing, early testing of people symptomatic are still very important and won't be replaced with vaccination. Vaccination will add to safety, but it won't replace these other public health measures.
Professor Irving, thank you so much for your time this morning. We really appreciate it.
Pleasure.